They used to have their own shop on Yates Street. It was opened in 1947, the fall of 1947, which was a very nice experience for a lot of us. I started at the Bay, and then I transferred when Eaton's opened into that area of mail order work.
So you had worked in mostly store work and as a retail clerk before that?
Well, that's really, I was the stenographer. And when I first came to Victoria, you probably will be interested in this. When I came to Victoria, I had a child to support and was looking for a means of support for both of us. I had been working in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, where I came from, for Ross Thatcher, who eventually became the Liberal Premier of Saskatchewan. But we came out to Victoria because my mother-in-law was here and not really looking for a job to come to Victoria to look for a job, but we came to Victoria because I found that I was locked into a situation where it was not really an easy position for any woman with a child to get a job in Victoria that would give them enough money to support themselves. So I first of all went around to all the offices where I was capable of handling the private secretarial work. And the most they offered me in that year was about $16, $17 a week. Well, I knew that I couldn't live on that. So I ended up at the Bay, the Hudson Bay. And the personnel person there was a woman and very understanding of the problems that I was encountering. So I asked her what the highest paid position was that she had that was open. And she said, a contometer operator. So I said, all right, I'll take it. And she said, are you a contometer operator? And I said, yes, I am. And so that was Monday, and I was then to start on Thursday. So I left her office, went down to the business school, and took a crash course in contometer work from Monday to Thursday morning, working all day and night. The instructor was very interested in this, and I think he's followed my career almost ever since. But I started to work on Thursday morning as a contometer operator, getting $22 a week, which was the highest paid female job that I could find in Victoria in 1947.
What did you do for child support in terms of child care?
Well, I lived with my mother-in-law, and my sister-in-law was teaching here in Victoria at the time. So a lot of those problems were solved by my mother-in-law, looking after my child.
Were most of the other people you worked with women?
Oh, yes, they were all women. Particularly in the contometer area in the Hudson Bay, they were all women. Then when I transferred into Eaton's, the manager of Eaton's was a man, and the assistant manager was a woman.
Did the women who worked in these department stores face similar kinds of conditions as you, for example, being single parents with children to support?
Oh, I'm certain that there must have been, but I didn't really know that many of them. It was just after the war, you know, so I'm certain that there were a lot of single parents who had to support children on their own. My husband was not in the service, so there was no pension or anything like that. We were strictly on our own.
What kind of attitudes were there towards women having the right to a job in that time? Men had come back from the service, and were there any expressions of fear that women would take men's jobs or push men who had served overseas out of the labor force at all?
I didn't encounter anything like that. I never had that kind of a problem, nor was I conscious of it, except that I knew that the wages for women were far beneath those of what they were offering the men.
What were the conditions like in the Bay and Eaton?
I had a happy time in the Bay. The hours were long, and we worked very hard. It was not an easy job. We worked hard at it. When I transferred over to Eaton's mail order, I had worked with Eaton's before I went into the service, and I found them to be a really great company to work for. I've always supported Eaton's in almost all of my expressions because they were very good to me at a time when I really needed the help. And when I was at the mail order office, the manager, or I guess you would call him the manager, got into difficulties and he left, and then the assistant manager left, and so it became my responsibility then to carry on the mail order business. And that, I think, was one of my happy times. I had a staff of 12, and we hired just one boy, and he was our wrapper and shipper, but the rest were all women, and two of them were sole supporters of their family.
What kind of work did you do in mail order?
Well, we took orders and had them come in, just like the Simpsons mail order does today, and Eaton's did for many years. You put in an order, people come in, put in an order, and you order them through the catalog, and they come back. When our first indication that our nice little business was going to dissolve was when we got word that Eaton's had bought out Spencer's stores. And a lot of people in Victoria will remember the Spencer's store here in Victoria. It was now where the arcade building is that Eaton's occupy. And we then moved in and took the mail order business with us after a year of them being in business, and then took on the personal shopping as well for the store. And we dropped some of our staff, but the staff was then moved into the other parts of the store, and I really worked hard to make sure that that was completed.
How long did you work there?
I started there in early 1948, and I left in 50.
Why did you decide to leave?
I left because I remarried and decided that I would like to have some time at home with my son.
Why did you decide to rejoin the workforce? And when was that?
Well, even after I left Eaton's, I couldn't really stay away. And I think I worked in every department in Eaton's store and substituted, you know, in each area. So I got to know the whole store, and I'd go in for a month at a time, or 2 months, or 3 months, but nothing permanent. And then I stayed home for a couple of years and got kind of itchy feet again and went to work for the Dominion Security Company.
What was it that you missed about working when you were at home?
I think it was mostly my own money. I had been put in a position where I had to really get out and earn my own money and have to be responsible for the money. And just to think that I had to live within someone else's income, I think really stimulated me to get out to work. I had a very happy home. There was no problems that way. And my young son really liked to have me home, and I stayed as much as I could. But I felt I needed a break and to keep myself open to what was going on around the different areas. And I found that I'm afraid I'm a person that's not very much for coffee parties in the morning and gossiping. I'm not that kind of a person.
So you then got a job at the security company?
I worked with Dominion Securities, which is a security company. And that was great, too. There were six, I think, almost millionaires that worked with us. It was a tremendous experience for me. I learned a great deal about securities. Some of the experiences have paid off in one or two ways. But they were great. They were tremendous people. They were very chauvinistic, the men that I worked with, but delightful.
So after you worked there, did you move on to another job?
Well, I had a small daughter. I had a daughter, and I stayed home then until she became, I think she was 7 years old before I thought of going back to work again. And I, in the meantime, had joined Toastmistress. And, you know, when you start to go to Toastmasters, they encourage you to use your training. So one thing led to another, and first thing I knew, I was back looking for something to do in the labor movement.
What is Toastmasters? Can you describe it?
Well, it's an international club that teaches women the opportunity, gives women the opportunity to speak, and teaches them parliamentary procedure. And have you never been to a Toastmasters meeting?
No,
You haven't, it's delightful. I think it's one of the greatest organizations that I have ever belonged to. It really is, and I've learned a great deal. And there's no way that I could handle the conventions and the meetings that I do today without that background.
So it gives you training in terms of being able to play a leadership role almost as a woman in organization?
Definitely a leadership role. Because it not only learns you to control yourself, but it also learns you to teaches you to listen. To listen what other people are saying and to evaluate what they are saying. And I think that that's a great learning process. And it's quite difficult to do, actually. And you learn how to take evaluation. And I think that some of the people that I've come up against in different areas of elections and debates, I think that's the part that throws them, that I am able to take evaluation and understand it because I've been trained in being able to take that evaluation and learn from evaluation.
It's really interesting. How did you become interested in it and find out about it?
My girlfriend and I one night decided that we would go. We'd read about it in the paper and thought we'd like to go and see what it was all about. Just curious.
And you got involved based on that?
Oh, yes. And there are a lot of people who have been involved. You know, I've known a great many women who have gone through Toastmistress, and now Toastmasters, they are combined in many areas now today.
Mm-hmm. So they encouraged women to work, in fact, to use the skills that they had developed?
Not really. It gave you a feeling of wanting to do more than what you were doing, shall I put it that way. Mm-hmm. And the job that I went into was not really that inspiring a job or as great a challenge as I would have liked. But the prime importance to me was that I did something that I thought I would enjoy and yet had time to be with my children. Mm-hmm. And my family have really always come first. I'm very fond of my family. And so the school board offered those hours for me. And that's how I became involved with the school board. And I started in the libraries. And I looked after all the high school libraries. I helped with the cataloging and the receiving of all books and helped with the ordering of all books within all the libraries in the schools in Victoria.
So when you say that the job gave you hours that allowed you to have time with your family, what kind of hours were they?
About 9 to 4, and then they extended on, you know, as jobs progress, you always seem to get longer hours, and so it finally got up to 9 to 3, and then I was almost working 6 hours a day, and when that came to that point where I had to then have someone come in and be here at 3 o'clock, I didn't like that very well, and I found that I was missing out on the excitement of the children coming home. Because that's really when they're bubbly. So I then went back and reverted back to a 4-hour day, which was with the dental department, with the school board. So that was another area that I enjoyed very much too. I was working with the young people.
What kind of work were you doing with it?
It's an educational program. They have it still, you know, here in Victoria with the regional district. But at that time, it was with the school district, and it was an educational program where we went and showed films and talked, gave demonstrations to the children in their classrooms, and examined their teeth and did the mm-hmm. prophylaxis. And the.
Okay. So it meant that you had contact with the public?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We did quite a lot of that. I was in the dental corps during the Army days, so the war, so it was my field as well.
What, had you been enlisted during the Army?
Yes, I was with the CWAC in the Dental Corps.
Can you describe a bit the kind of work that you did with them?
Oh, it was the same as, this is one area that surprised me too. I was a dental assistant on the chair, which was assisting the dentist with the work. And we handled the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. that Alucard looked after all the forces, regardless to what they were. But as soon as the commanding officer found out that I could type, he pulled me off the chair, put me back in the little office to do his letters and whatnot. And that lasted just so long because he was, I'll call him a fuddy-duddy, really, the commanding officer at that time. He'd be giving you dictation, and all of a sudden he'd go off and think about something, and you'd be taking dictation that was not relevant to what you were doing at all. So I finally put a complaint in and got transferred back on the chair. And there I stayed once the commander was changed, and I was put back in my role, and one of the men went in and did the type.
Was that initial transfer a form of discrimination in the sense that he understood that you were a woman and you could type, therefore you should be a secretary as opposed to letting you do a technical job?
Well, I don't really think he thought about it. I think he just thought that, well, there's somebody that really knows how to type. And a lot of the men got to be typists because there was no one there. And the dental corps was very difficult to get into in the first place. Mm-hmm. I was really the first woman to be in the dental corps in Regina. The commanding officer just was not for women being in the dental corps. That changed after a couple of years.
Did you go from base to base doing this work?
Yes. Most of our work, though, was done right in the Regina area. And I didn't go out of Saskatchewan. I stayed in Saskatchewan. I met my husband there, and I didn't make any pushes forward to get overseas or anything like that.
Can you talk a bit about your family background? What kind of work your father did, if your mother worked, what kind of work she did?
Mm-hmm.
And a bit of where you grew up.
Well, we grew up, I was born in a little town called Elbow, Saskatchewan. And there were 7 children in the family. And Dad worked for the Western Green Elevator Company. And he had a habit of coming home every Friday night and putting us all back in order. And what I've always maintained, that Dad brought us up like a crew of elevator men. But anyway, he was a dear soul and worked very hard himself. Mom never went to work, but with 7 children, she really had her hands full at home. Dad traveled then most of Saskatchewan, and we moved then quite often. We moved to a lot of different points, and Dad would then take the area in which we had moved. And our last point that I was at home was in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. And it was there that I signed up and joined the Army. But Mom and Dad eventually then moved into Winnipeg, Dad into head office. And my father was a very tough man because he had worked with men all of his life, and he had his own ideas about what should be and what shouldn't be. My being part of the union structure really upset my father. He couldn't understand how I could be so involved. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of arguments about it, and finally I just refused to argue anymore. I just said, we're just not going to talk about it, Dad. But anyway, I think I did convince him of some of the better points of unionism. My mother, she was a sweet thing. She was Rebecca all of her life, and loved her lodge very dearly. And when she got older, I joined that lodge so that I could help with her getting there and going back. But it ended up that I eventually became the past noble grand of that lodge. So it just took another 6 years of very busyness to... But I've enjoyed it. I've never regretted it. And the people that are within that Rebecca Lodge and the Oddfellows have made a great contribution to my life.
All right, so you were working for the school board, and mm-hmm. at some point in this, you became interested in trade unionism.
Well, yes, we became a union at the school board, I think it was 1965 or 66. And it wasn't a very well-organized area at the time. It depended on how fast you could talk as to what your wage was. I know that I made more money than the person that was working next to me. And that really wasn't very fair. We really didn't have any benefits whatsoever, absolutely none. We had the holidays that were stipulated by the government labor laws, and that was all. We had a lot of men on staff at that time, and they certainly were making more money than the women. And one of the men got to be the president of this new local. And so I went one night just to hear what it was all about, and I was astounded at how the meeting was run and what was being done. So a few of us got together and we decided that we should maybe run and reorganize this union of ours. It was something new to us. I'd never belonged to a union, nor had I even really been very interested in unions. Just never thought too much about it. And neither had the others that I was working with. So we talked one of the girls by the name of Kay Fraser to run as president, and the rest of us went on the executive. And it wasn't long before we had negotiations going pretty well our way. But the opposition on the employer side was very chauvinistic, and we had to take a lot of ridicule, which I don't think I'll ever forgive some of those people for. Not for myself particularly, but for a lot of the people that we were working with. We, of course, have a different way of negotiating now. It's altogether different. You don't negotiate with people like that anymore.
When the local was being organized, had there been an association there before?
No, there'd been nothing.
So how did QB organize?
Well, the outside people that worked in the outside, shall I say, the janitors, custodians, and the people that worked in the gardens and things like that, they were organized before we were. They were local before we became a local. But there was a drive by QB to bring as many people within a unit together, and we agreed. We decided that perhaps that's what we wanted as well, so we became organized. I was president of that local, I think, for 8 years. And while I was president, I became president of the island, which is the Vancouver Island District Council. And I became treasurer of the division, which is all of BC, the BC division of QB. I was the treasurer for almost 3 years. And then I transferred into vice presidency, and I have been now the president for 4 years.
Of the BC division.
Of the BC division.
Can you talk about the different kinds of work and responsibility that those positions have required?
A lot of time and a lot of slugging that the average membership has no idea that they're asking you to do for them. You have to do a lot of research in order to meet the employer on their behalf. And it takes a lot of time and effort. And the treasurer of the division, I think, was one of the toughest positions I held. Many, many nights I sat up doing books till 2 a.m. and one thing or another, because you had your full-time job to do as well. And I had the other areas of responsibility. And while I was treasurer, we had the big lockouts began. So we had the lockouts in the Vancouver mainland area. We had the lockout in Kamloops. We had the big lockout here, which meant a lot of strike pay having to be paid. Oh dear, what year was that? It was in the early 70s. I would say it was maybe 70, 73, 74.
Was it before the NDP was elected?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Can you talk a bit about the issues of the lockout? What the school boards were trying to...
It was mostly money and job security. And that's really one of the problems that we're still facing, is job security. And the percentages have not been very high for the public servant. In those days, they were very minimal. 4% was a good salary increase, or 3%. We had to fight very hard to get 3 and 4%, which is nothing of nothing. You know, we've come a long way since those days. And it just took one local to go on strike, and then the rest were locked out.
Did this come in part from opposition to the right to unionize in the public sector?
Well, I think so. I think so. I think they've always tried to hold down the public sector, hoping that they would not gain a higher wage base than the independent employers, because once the wages go up in the public sector, then the independent employer is also forced then to pay a higher wage. And so whether the person earns it or not, they don't want to pay it. And it's that way today.
Mm-hmm. What did you do as vice president, and then what do you do now as president? What are your tasks?
Well, the vice presidency, of course, was to assist the president with the BC division. And there's a lot of having to go and come. And then it also put me in a position of running as the regional vice president on the National Executive Board, and I am there still on the National Executive of the Canadian Union of Public Employees.
And what kinds of issues do the executive boards discuss and then implement in terms of policy making?
Well, no, we have conventions. We have an annual convention every year, and that annual convention really sets our policy, just like almost any organization. We go then from the convention resolutions, and we then make that our year's work. But in the meantime, of course, there are many issues come up that we have to handle in between. But the main policy setting is done at our convention by the delegation, by the resolutions they submit. And they're asking us to do certain things for them until the next convention.
As an executive board member, are you responsible for negotiations?
No. I sit in many of them. Uh-huh. Not so much as sit in on negotiations, but I sit in on the discussions that come out of those negotiations. And we always have reports on negotiations at all of our divisional board meetings. We know exactly what is going on in each bargaining area.
What are the central issues that have come up in the period of time that you've been a leadership person within QP?
Well, I think one of my main interests, of course, was when the status of women was first started, and that was back in 1970. I then thought that we should really have something going in British Columbia, because I could see the need. The first convention I went to, there were only three women at that convention, myself and the other person from my local that came with me, and one other person. Well, that was really disappointing to me, and really a surprise. So I thought, well, women must get more involved. And when I talked to people in my own local area and in different areas, they'd say, I don't have the nerve to stand up and talk. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't want to be part of the discussions. When people make motions, I don't know what to do about it, or I don't know how to make a motion, and so on and so forth. So at the convention, I think it was in 1972, I put forth a resolution that the BC division formulate a women's committee. And we were the first women's committee in British Columbia. The Federation came in after we started. But we started the first women's organization for working women in the province. And I chaired that, I guess, I think I've been out of it now for 3 years. But up to that point, I was the chairperson of that committee. And we've made it a standing committee within the BC Division Executive. And there's money funded to it. And we have at least two working seminars every year, and whereby women come and participate. You participate in the parliamentary procedure, in formulating resolutions, and so on and so forth.
So it's primarily training, skills training?
Educational training, and it's proven to be tremendous. You'll notice that within the QP organization, if you meet them, we have so many trade union women now really active. And I would say we have over half of the presidents and the locals in BC that are now women, and certainly on the negotiating teams. And and our own executive level, we now have our full-time officer on the division is a woman, and I have two other women on the executive.
Mm-hmm. What kind of percentage of the membership are women in keeping? They're large.
Oh, forces? The largest amount, particularly in BC. We have a large women percentage in BC. I really can't give you the exact percentage, but there are a lot of women. And there are actually across the whole organization.
What workers does QP represent? In what sectors and what kind of jobs do they do?
Well, we have the municipal workers and the school board workers and the hospitals, a lot of hospital workers, particularly in the private hospitals. And then down east, a lot of the hospitals. Here in BC, there are they have their own union. They used to be QP, but they withdrew from QP, and they are now on their own. But we have the university staffs, a lot of them, except some that are at UBC, and some in your own university we don't have. But the majority of the universities are QP, and the colleges. And, oh, let me see, we have police on the East Coast, and we have the CBC, of course, and MSA, and, you name it, we have all. We have anything, anyone that really works for the public outside of the government is within our jurisdiction.
Do you have jurisdiction over any sectors of government workers?
No, we do not. No, we do not.
Okay. And what kind of... in terms of women, what kind of issues have come up in QP that have been specifically related to women and women's needs, such as childcare or maternity leave? Have there been any particular kinds of discussions of women's issues?
Oh, yes, of course there have. And, of course, this is where the Women's Committee have come in strong because they have forced consideration of legislation changes. Mm-hmm. And this is, you don't think of it being done by women's committees, but a lot of the changes have been made through pressure by the women's groups, and even the pension plans and the different areas have been changed by women's committees pushing for different changes, and the maternity leaves are in every contract now, I think, where they certainly weren't a long time ago, and contract language, which would be rather difficult for me to explain to you at this point, but a lot of that language has been changed to make it people and everyone equal. And at one time, you know, we had group life insurance, so much for the women and so much for the men. Well, that's long gone. It's now for the worker. We, even in your superannuation, the spouse was not entitled to your superannuation if you were a woman. That too has been changed. And oh, we've been very busy. I think we've accomplished a great deal.
Right. So the Women's Committee in part seems to play a kind of consciousness-raising role within the union itself. Is that true?
Very true. The male employees were very hesitant about accepting the Women's Committee for some time. And then finally we invited them to come, and we called it a people's conference instead of a women's conference. And the men that came were really excited and thrilled and realized that we were not doing anything to jeopardize the men. All we were doing was giving the women an opportunity to learn more about their union structure and how to accomplish what they want to accomplish from their organization.
Has there been any discussion or any particular contract struggles, perhaps, over the issue of equal pay and equal work for women?
Well, I really can't give you any specific case, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. But I'm certain that within each local area there has been the grievances have been handled that way, but we have now got a very good structure of grievances, so things like that are handled before they get very far. You know, within our contract language, those grievances are handled, I think, before they get too difficult.
Is equal pay and equal pay for work of equal value, are those policies of QP?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, yes.
And
the only thing is you have a difficult time, you know, value, work value, that's where we have our problems.
Can you talk a bit about the problems around that? Because I know that's an issue that's come up again and again in the labor movement, how to deal with the question of fixing value. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a great problem, because it's difficult to get your employer to evaluate the value of the work that you do. We within our organization have a terrific evaluation system now, and we've brought it in within two or three, four or five locals, and whereby they have evaluated and they do it on a point system. And so that regardless to what position you're doing, your job value is evaluated for its value, and you're paid on that. But it's very difficult to get the employers to go along with you on that, because they know that it means an upgrading of some positions. And ordinarily they leave the anomalies to negotiations, and then they sit and argue back and forth about jobs that perhaps they really don't know what it's all about either. A lot of employers don't know what they're asking their employees to do. And jobs grow. Definitely they grow. And I know in my own area, as a school secretary, administrative secretary, there are times when you're carrying more responsibility than certainly what you were hired to do. You're not just sitting there typing and taking shorthand. That's not what you're doing anymore at all. And most jobs do grow as you get into them. And to get the employers to give you the opportunity to evaluate the value of those positions, that's really where we have to go, and it's difficult. We now have 6 evaluators throughout the country that travel and assist the employees and the employer to evaluate their work staff.
So those evaluation processes end up being negotiated issues, in a sense?
They have to be part of the negotiations, yes. To the point where they agree that there will be an evaluation system. Otherwise, we're still back in the dark ages trying to handle anomalies individually, and it just doesn't work.
Right. Has it also been a consistent policy of QP to upgrade generally all of the evaluations of the work categories for women?
Well, we've worked very hard at that, of course, but that in itself is something that takes a continued effort, because each area is quite different. I mean, you can work in a school district and they have different categories. We try to have them all united and the same in unison, but you're dealing with different employers, and it's not always that easy to do. The upgrading of the women's salaries, I just don't know how we're ever going to accomplish that, because they seem to want to keep them in that low pay range, and there's not much we can do about it. I remember one time talking to a negotiator, and I said, now look, we've got to do something about the clerk typist area. It's just not enough money for that person to live on if they have to raise a family. And he said, well, Muriel, he said, I'm sorry, but he says, there's got to be the poor ones. There's nothing we can do about it. He says, there's no way you're getting it lifted. Now that was his attitude. It's got to be the poor ones. And when we first started to, and when the NDP came into power, that was a real uplift for us, because they were the politicians that understood and realized that the people who were working for that government needed an upgrading in their wage package. And they gave them that upgrading. That then gave us the opportunity to step up as well. And we had, at that time, people, women, working on a seven and a half hour shift work, and not earning enough to support their family. And they were subsidized by welfare. And yet, people today condemn the NDP for raising the standard of living within the public servants. They condemn them today for doing that, for upgrading them such a large percentage.
Can you talk a bit about the question of political action and the relationship between trade unionism and involvement with the NDP?
Well,
How did you get involved in the Olympics?
Well, I think there's only one thing we can do, and that's that we found out that everything we wanted to do took political action. Every resolution that was put on the floor meant that we had to make some political action in order to accomplish what we wanted. And it was just every time we went to do something, it meant that we had to go into some political process in order to accomplish that. We had to go before politicians. We were meeting politicians that were absolutely unbinding as to their bias toward the trade union movement and the people that were trying to make representation for. And it was not really until this last time, the last few years, that the social credit government were in. And I was really involved in making presentations to this government. Really serious issues. Not only involving the trade union movement, but social issues. Things that I felt and our organization felt needed to be looked at and have attention to. That I went before that cabinet and had swivel chairs turned on me. And the arrogance of those people was just unbelievable. And I vowed then that if there was anything that I could ever do to help put some of those people out of office, I would do everything in my power to do that. Because they were not remotely interested in the people of this province. And I believe that today. That's really what got me involved. And although I have been a supporter of the NDP for some time, I did not join the NDP until, I think it was 3 years ago or something like that. With never any intention of running myself. I joined the NDP and went to the Oak Bay constituency because it was my constituency. And I thought, I'm going to go and just find out what this NDP is all about. Because I want to support it. I feel that we should support it. It seems to be our only way out. But I don't know really enough about it to be able to sell it to anybody else. So I joined the Oak Bay constituency. I tried to go when I could, but I'm a very busy person. I travel a great deal, so I'm not always able to be at the meetings when I would like to have been. But I did learn quite a lot, and certainly learned a lot since the election. But when it came time then for me to, I became part of the executive of this constituency, and when we were looking for a candidate for the election, I really helped them look. I really did. And then we decided that everyone we had suggested, they either couldn't run, they were going on a sabbatical or something like that. We had a couple of people that were interested at the university. But so we kind of come up with dead ends. And I was very concerned, and I said, well, I really don't know what we're going to do. And they said, oh, we know what we're going to do. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, we've got our candidate all picked out. And I said, well, who is it? And they said, it's you. Well, I had not really thought about running. And I didn't really know whether I could manage it or not. But once I made up my mind, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Can you turn that off a sec?